Canto 10, chapter 36, text number 20, which has a very, very short purport. But because we have a lot of ground to cover, you might brace yourself till 12 o'clock.
4 o'clock morning.
Anyhow, however long it takes, because today is a power-packed day, and but we would like to spend a little time with it, even if it means fasting half a day. Okay, go ahead.
Pratiyate
tu
devarsho
kamsa
adasya
keshinam
presayam
asa
hanyitam
bhavata
rama
keshavau.
Pratiyate tu devarsho
kamsa avasa keshinam
presayam asahanyetam
bhavata rama keshavau.
Pratiyate tu
kamsa avasa keshinam
Vaisayam asahanyetam
Bhavata Ramakeshava.
Having left
to
them,
Devarsho,
sage among the demigods,
Kamsa,
King Kamsa,
Vasya,
Addressing
Keshinam,
the demon Keshi,
Presayam Asha,
he sent him,
Hanyetam,
the two should be killed,
Bhavata,
by you,
Ram,
Keshava,
Balaram,
and Krishna.
Translation.
After Narada left,
King Kamsa
summoned Keshi
and ordered
him,
go
kill
Rama
and Krishna.
Purport.
Before having
Krishna
and Balaram
brought to
Mathura,
Kamsa
tried
sending
one more
demon
to
Vrindavan.
That's
the purport.
Read it again.
After
Narada left,
King Kamsa
summoned
Keshi
and ordered
him,
go kill
Rama
and Krishna.
Purport.
Before
having
Krishna
and Balaram
brought to
Mathura,
Kamsa
tried sending
one more
demon
to Vrindavan.
That was
just in case
anyone was
sleeping.
Where is
Brajananda?
Stay
awake,
please.
Om
Agyana
Timiranda Chaganan
Jana
Shalakaya
Chakshon
Mithun
Kinatas
My Shri
Gurve Namaha
Shri
Chaitanya
Mano
Vishtam
Stapitam Jena
Bhutale
Swayam
Rupa Kadamayam
Tadatma
Svapatam
Padantikam
Shri
Radhika
Prana
Samam
Kinyasim
Vishaki
Kishikshi
Visokhi
Sastapam
Vila Mithinam
Shtiratan
Madhuram
Anupopam
Shramami
Manjana
Hey
Krishna
Kuruna
Sindhu
Dina Bandhu
Jigapit
Hey Gopeshi
Gopikakanta
Radha
Kanamastiti
Tap
the Kanchana
Gauran
Giradhi
Vrindavani
Sri
Rishabhano
Suti Devi
Pramami
Hari Priya
Pancha
Kalpatarubhyascha
Kripa
Sindhavyebhicha
Patitam
Pavanevi
Vaishnavevi
Namo
Namaha
Hare
Nama
Hare
Nama
Hare Nama
Eva Kevalam
Kalau
Nasteva
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 Katviranyata
Sri
Krishna
Chaitanya
Prabhu
Nitananda
Sri
Advaita
Garadhar
Shivasati
Govaktavinda
Hare
Krishna
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 Hare
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 Rama,
Hare Rama,
Rama
Rama,
Hare Hare.
So,
there's
this
is a short
purport.
Ram Roy Prabhu, in his last class a few days ago, discussed at length the position of Kamsa as the personification of atheism, which we won't reiterate very much. The basic understanding should be there that this whole material world is permeated at the onset with an atheistic consciousness of the conditioned souls. Basically, the material world means atheism, although there may appear to be various degrees of theism, but we could say rightly that this means that there are varying degrees or lesser and lesser degrees of atheism. So the atheistic tendency is to try to kill God or deny the existence of God for the purpose of establishing one's own supremacy. When a devotee tries to establish his own supremacy, which we'll get into a little bit, it is, let's say, due to residues of atheism still contaminating the heart. So, in the Acharya's commentary, there's a very short commentary in that the BBT has given us. I'll try to remember it. He mentions, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur mentions, that this word, prayasam asa hanyetam, is translated here as he sent him, prayasam asa, he sent him, means keshi, hanyetam, the two should be killed, bhavata, by you. Referring to Krishna Balaram, that Keshi, the intention was to kill Krishna and Balaram. So he's sending, deputing Keshi, you know, to do the dirty work. But Vishwanath says that the alternative meaning, the hidden meaning of these words, prayasam asa hanyetam bhavata, means that you should go and see them. Or in other words, that I am duly deputing you to be killed by them. So, there's some Hare Krishna. Jai ho, Shri Shri Nitai Go Radhe Sham, Shri Shri Krishna Balaram Ki Jai. So when Keshi comes to Braja, although he may create some disturbance for some time, it's to be understood that by the influence of Krishna consciousness, by the influence of Krishna, or the influence of Krishna consciousness, the Keshi demon, who personifies the vanity of political ambition, he also personifies other things, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But in short, it can be understood that the vanity of political ambition also, translates or is transposed in devotional life to mean a desire for, let's say, this jockeying for position with respect to the institutional hierarchy, etc., for the purpose of lording it over men and money, etc. So, because you must be knowing by now that the various demons who were killed by Krishna and Balaram, they represent symbolically for the sadhaka, particularly the Raganuga sadhaka, various anarthas which impede the progress to the actual assimilation of the principles of Vraja Bhakti. Because ultimately, the devotees are meant to recognize and come to the platform of appreciating the need to cultivate Vraja Bhakti. The cultivation of Vraja Bhakti means the cultivation of Rag Bhakti. Rag Bhakti means, Rag means attachment. So, the cultivation of Rag Bhakti means to develop by some system an attachment for the realm of Braja, an attachment for the Lord and Lady of Braja, an attachment for the devotees of Braja, who are all, regardless of their particular predilection of rasa, in any of the five rasas, the devotees of Braja serve in various ways to augment the Madhurya Leelas of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So in the cultivation of such bhakti, what to speak of the cultivation which ensues before one has the eligibility, before one has, before the greed for the attainment of the perfection of Radha and Krishna's seva has awakened in the heart, before the lobhamoy shraddha has appeared in the heart, which is the basis of that Raganuga bhajan, the Vaidhi shraddha and ensuing Vaidhi bhakti also may certainly be filled with these various, and must be, practically speaking, at least in the stages as a novice, bhakta, these anarthas must be plaguing the heart, which at times becomes as a stumbling block for the progress to the higher stages of devotion. Kesi represents the illusion of being a great devotee or acharya. The illusion of being a great devotee or the illusion of being an acharya. This lording it over and material pride must be given up in order to progress in spiritual life, Because our goal is prema and not maryada prema, which means reverential prema of Vaikuntha as the result of Vaidhi Bhakti. Our goal is braja prema based on raganuga bhav. That is our goal. So this prema, the ornament of such prema, is humility. Without humility as the seedbed for bhakti, then we can hardly expect that the creeper of bhakti will grow in such a way as to produce the fruit. Just like if the creeper is choked by weeds, or the weeds are taking the nourishment which is actually meant for the creeper, then that creeper may grow weak. And the fruits, if any at all, may be, let's say, stunted or retarded or tasteless, relatively tasteless. So, as the realm of braja is the realm of the highest rasa, or the highest taste, it is to be expected that our cultivation of bhakti must come to that position by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and our predecessor acharyas. It must come to that position of producing the sweetest taste, the sweetest fruit, the most luscious fruit. But if the anartas are choking the creeper, and particularly this anarta, personified by Keshi demon, you may be knowing that Kansa has sent so many other demons before with the attempt to kill Krishna. But this Keshi demon, he is basically the last demon on the list. Vyomasura is also there. But Keshi demon, particularly, because it's just like a devotee may overcome many of the anartas, but then after overcoming many of the anartas, he may come to think that, oh, I've done such a great job. My sadhana, by the strength of my determination, by the strength of my sadhana, I've overcome these anarthas by my determination to take shelter of Krishna. So on account of my sadhana, I've come to such an elevated position. So this is another type of ahankara. This is another type of ass-like mentality. Ahankaro. I am the doer. That it is by my efforts that I have become such a great recognized devotee or acharya. In short, at least in our ISKCON movement, this syndrome has been aptly labeled as DADS, D-A-D-S, the dreaded Acharya disease syndrome. So we have to be a little careful of these things, because when that pride enters the heart or plagues the heart, then naturally, due to that false egoism, thinking oneself to be the cause of the results of his activities, even in devotional service, that deludes one into thinking that I am the, the doer, I am the important individual, and it bewilders one into forgetting the essential cause of all progress in devotional life as being the mercy of Guru and the mercy of Krishna, the mercy of Radharani, the mercy of the Holy Dham. So because of that false egoism or pride by which one may come to the position of regarding himself or herself, excuse me, as a great devotee or as an acharya, now everybody worship me. Higher than worshiping God is worshiping the devotee. So it is more dangerous in certain respects to take the position as the devotee of God in the matter of allowing anyone to worship or touch one's feet. I wish I could remember verbatim from Kalyan Kalpataru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says that if I think that I'm a devotee, do you remember this? If I think that I'm a Vaishnava, can you remember it?
Then I'll look forward to gaining praise from all these.
Then I'll look forward, if I think that I'm a Vaishnava, then I'll look forward to being honored by others as such. And furthermore, if I allow others to take the remnants, my jutta, or the remnants of the prasad left on my plate, Srila Prabhupada says that it is not the duty of the sannyasi to leave remnants for others. Because, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells, if one leaves remnants for others, then the vanity of being the master and others being the servant may plague his heart. And when that false pride enters the heart, then surely I will go to hell. So we have to be very careful regarding these things in the matter of the cultivation of pure devotional bhajan. Furthermore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says here, I'll just read this little short paragraph. Keshi demon, a demon in the form of a horse, personifies the practitioner's conception of being more expert than others in devotional service. Sometimes we see, actually, sometimes if a devotee performs severe austerities, or if a devotee is, like a computer brain and has the ability to regurgitate information in such a way as to pose as being very knowledgeable, or if a devotee, manifests a religious fervor, which appears to be more so than others, then very often that devotee, rather than becoming humble, he becomes proud of his or her achievements. So, actually, the fruit of bhakti, the fruit of knowledge, the fruit of renunciation is humility. So, what an absurdity when by bhakti we become puffed up with a sense of achievement, or by acquisition of knowledge we become puffed up thinking that we are more knowledgeable than others, we're more devoted than others, we're more knowledgeable than others. Sometimes we see this, isn't it? That vanity, the face is the index of the mind. Or we could say, you know, there are various other expressions which may manifest in the devotional community, which give reason to believe that such may be the case in the heart of the, let's say, enthusiastic bhakta, or even the enthusiastic or the knowledgeable devotee. He becomes proud of his devotion, that we're the real devotees. He becomes proud of his knowledge, that I know more than you. I know more than you don't know. You know, this type of thing. Or he becomes proud of his tapasya. This happens very often in the matter of tapasya. Someone performs tapasya, even in devotional service, by fasting, strictly observing chaturmasya, or strictly observing, you know, Nirjal Ekadasi, for example. So all the other devotees are running to the prasadam room, you know, three times a day. But here I am, I'm fasting, nirjal, just see, you know. Don't you know? You mean I didn't tell anybody? Oh, I was supposed to keep it secret. So that, you know, nobody knows about my tapasya. Tapasya should be done alone. Not that we advertise ourselves that I'm such a great tapasvi. Just see, you know, you guys looking down at my, you know, my nose, you know, going to prasadam three times a day. But the truth is that maybe they don't have to perform such severe tapasyas. Maybe they've performed severe tapasyas for many lifetimes, and now they get to enjoy the mercy of Krishna in the form of three times up to the neck Mahaprasad. You know? Just like I remember my friend Tripurari Swami in the old days, Radha Damodar. One time the Gaur Purnima festival was going on, and he left Gaur Purnima festival and to come back to distribute books. In other words, he didn't stay for the festival, he went back to distribute books. And he said, which I thought was a little useful for our bhajan, that I'm so fallen that if I don't distribute books, I don't know what will happen to me. I need to be out here distributing books because I'm too fallen. I remember he said like that, something like that. So anyway, I wish he was still out there distributing books. But anyhow. Yeah, Keshi Demon. When he comes to Braja, he creates a great disturbance. As a Vaishnava gradually begins proclaiming his own superiority, a mentality of disrespect for the Lord arises. And we should also, I'll add here, even though probably I shouldn't. Oh, I was just informed that Tripurari Maharaj just recently distributed 5,000 Gitas, so very good. Hari Bol. I don't know whether they were Prabhupada's Gitas, though. So. I don't know whether that matters or not anymore for some people. Anyhow. I'm going to interject if Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't mind. He says that as a Vaishnava gradually begins to proclaim his own superiority, a mentality of disrespect for the Lord arises, and I should add, if you don't mind, a mentality of disrespect for the Lord's devotees also arises. And the devotee falls from his position. So we've seen this, haven't we, sometimes? Unfortunately, we don't like to open the can of worms, and we won't. At least not, we won't let too many worms out. Therefore, it is most important to prevent this evil mentality from entering the heart. Even if one is expert in devotional service, a Vaishnava will never give up the quality of humility. If one does so, then there is a need for killing Keshi. This is the 18th obstacle in the matter of cultivating Braja Bhakti. So, anyhow, we were in Mathura with Kamsa, and he will now call for his wrestlers, his ministers, etc., and then he will call for Akrura and request Akrura to bring Krishna and Balaram. Akrura means not cruel. But ironically, Akrura is seen, at least by the Brajbasis, as being most cruel. So Akrura, very soon, there's only one or two more chapters before Akrura takes our Krishna away from us. So anyway, before that happens, there's some nice Braja Lila Katha, which we should discuss today in the matter of this Vasant Panchami. Because Vasant, as you know, is a very romantic time of the year. Of course, we should not try to exploit the Vasant season, especially in Vrindavan. Please, don't mind me pressing this point a little bit. Especially in Vrindavan, we should not exploit this Vasant season, materially, to try to augment The Tarzan meets Jane. Jane meets Tarzan. Programming at the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Unfortunately, over the years, the Krishna Balaram Mandir, the Vrindavan Yatra, has become otherwise known as the International Meat Mart. This is the breeding ground for licentiousness and promiscuity. Please, do you understand? So this is not the place for that. This is grievous offense at the lotus feet of Radharani. And to encourage such offenses is not at all becoming any kind of a devotee. So don't mind, but it's a good opportunity to hammer on this point a little bit. Many times I'm seeing the boys and the girls lingering around on the samadhi steps right in front of Srila Prabhupada, for God's sake. As if we have no better sense. Checking out one and the other. It's total nonsense. And I please request all of you to cease and desist from such foolishness in the Holy Dham. Better to take shelter of the Adiras, the original prototype of this perverted reflection found in the material world, and experience something sublime, something sweet, something actually tasteful, something which is far beyond the unification of the urinals of this material world. So I'm going to read a little something. Now it's 9 o'clock. Anyone who's anxious to go for prasad, I have no objection if you like to go for prasad. I won't hold it against you. And we won't think that we're better devotees than you. We'll understand. So I'm going to read some things. And if you want to hear something really good, then stick around. It's going to be considerable reading. We have a few things to cover because it's the Vasant season. I would like to, let's say, help the devotees to enter into the spirit of what the Vasant season is in Vrindavan for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna, who are the king and queen of Vrindavan. Mango trees laden with new buds announce the arrival of spring. So I'm reading from Kavi Karnapur's Ananda Vrindavan Champu. The sight is as pleasing as the union of lovers instigated by fresh longing. Blossoming Madhavi creepers appear along the pathways as a sadhaka sometimes sighs while traversing the path of self-realization. Ashok trees, exploding with splendid red flowers, drive away all lamentation. Like the Lord's devotees, who have transcended the misty coverings of hankering and lamenting. The clumps of fresh buds on the Kanchana trees appear like groups of famous pundits studying the scriptures. The groves of betel trees look like groups of mad elephants in great contingents bent on war. Sweet-scented mandara trees add more beauty to the season. These trees appear like intoxicated men sauntering about after drinking liquor. Cuckoos play about the trees like the restless monkeys in Ramachandra's phalanx. Lingering in the air is the fine scent of clove trees, fleeting like the happiness derived from material pleasures. The large numbers of bakul trees appear like the strong men serving in the dynasty of Ishvaku. Creepers of blooming Malika flowers beautify the landscape just as the seven notes embellish the musical scale. Flowering karira trees fill the air with an intoxicating aroma like the liquid flowing from the head of love-crazed elephants. Flower-scented breezes accent the spring season just as lust agitates a materially attached man. Moon rays increase their brilliance with the departure of the cold and embrace the spring nights like a person delivered from death. While the springtime moon glistens sweetly in the clear skies above, the young gopis enjoy sweet pastimes in the groves below. When the soft breezes caress the sweet fragrances within the groves, the gopis come to gather flowers. Attracted by the beauty of the unlimited flowers on the trees, playful Krishna, wearing a golden necklace, attains the height of bliss from seeing the gopis in the prime of their youth. Dense swarms of humming bees, eager to taste the pollen of lotuses, darken the sky as they speed toward the flowers. But seeing the bees bypass them, the lotus flowers argue amongst themselves. Why not drink from me first? Have I committed any offense to you? Though the flowers offer their pollen to the bees do not accept. Instead, they become intoxicated by smelling the fragrance from the lotus mouths of the Brajagopis, whose hearts overflow with intense feelings of love for Krishna. Seeing the palasa trees devoid of leaves, the bees conjecture, what happened to the palasa groves? They are as dry as a parrot's beak. What else can be said? In this season, the cuckoos, truly the embodiments of primordial sound, open their beaks to taste the mango and then begin to coo. At this time, the bees inside the mango buds come out to take rest. The best of the maddened elephants roams about with the intoxicated gopis of Braja. Who's the best of the maddened elephants, please? Shyamsundar, Krishna, our Shyamsundar. Roams about with the intoxicated gopis of Braja, whose sweet whispering defeats the soothing sound of running water. The cuckoos resound like a bell to announce their arrival. Spring personified looks attractive with her beautiful Nagakeshar flower earrings, Madhavi creeper neck jewelry, Malati flowers adorning her breast, red palasa bindu, champak flower bodice, and a red ashok flower sash around her waist. Various types of tiny creepers appear at this time of the year, which smile with their glittering flowers, cry tears of love in the form of dripping honey nectar, and horripilate with new buds. So this is just a description of the spring season, which is setting the stage for the bulk of our reading, which will be a description of the spring festival of Holi. Because this Basant Panchami marks the beginning of the very famous Holi season in Braja. Krishna is given leave from his duties of herding the cows by Nanda Maharaj for about 2 weeks or so, it is mentioned. At some time during this season, just so that he can have, because as the holy season gets going, more interest in such types of sportive leelas manifest in the hearts of Krishna and the gopis. So to facilitate his play, Nanda Maharaj sometimes gives him leave from his cowherding duties, like a vacation. As the rising sun beautified the blue sky with a brilliant light, Krishna got up and dressed gorgeously like a dramatic actor. Taking his cows and friends, it appears here that he has not yet been given leave of his cowherd duties. Taking his cows and friends, he entered the forest of Vrindavan. Every day, Nandanandan, who satisfies the desires of all surrendered souls, roamed and played in the forest in order to remove the distress of separation felt by the forest deer, birds, and creepers. When Krishna went to the forest, Batu, who is another name, Batu is a nickname for Madhumangal, Krishna's funny Brahmin friend, Vidusaka. Batu, when Krishna went to the forest, Batu decided to wander alone in the village of Gokul. He had a plan to open a treasure box of good fortune for the residents of Vrindavan. Batu looked somewhat funny with his thick neck and slightly bent over body as he sauntered down the road. Upon seeing Batu, the aristocratic mothers-in-law of the gopis suddenly approached him and welcomed him with great affection. In a submissive tone, they said, "O wise one of keen intelligence, have you studied the Vedas that ornament every man of knowledge?" Oh, that ornament. Every man of knowledge. Smiling slightly, Batu replied, "Oho, I am a powerful astrologer, fully versed in the agamas. What is the use of studying other scriptures which are not very palatable to the intelligence?" The elderly gopi said, "O best person in the world, please tell us what profound truth you have discovered in all your studies." Batu jokingly replied, "Ang ho, O best ladies of Vrindavan, the Jyoti Shastra, astrology, shines with great power and influence. By studying astrology, one can know the good and bad events of the past and also predict the auspicious and inauspicious things that will happen now and in the future. By worshipping the demigods described in the Agama Shastras, one obtains the power to cause or prevent things from happening. Such astrologers can make the impossible become possible and turn the possible into the impossible." The gopis replied, "Bravo, well done, all glories to you. This time is just suitable to ask you a few questions. The dakshin for your service, as dakshin for your service, we will offer you many rich, tasty laddus. We have a very confidential question that we cannot ask inside our houses. Please dispel our doubt. Is there any person on earth or in heaven who will not use his knowledge to benefit others?" Smiling, Batu said, "If you give me many cows with full milk bags, I will bestow my mercy upon you. I am a wise Brahmin, and by consulting the planetary transits, I will tell you exactly what is auspicious and inauspicious. Hidden within me is the power of omniscience." Remember, these are the elderly gopis. In a jubilant mood, the gopis said, "The wealth of cows is like dust particles for us. If you answer our question, we can give you whatever you want from this world." Batu said, "Wealth does not interest me, but in order to spread my fame, I am requesting this. So now you may ask your question." The elderly gopis said, "We are chaste housewives of Vrindavan and are not feeling the slightest misery. But we have one unsolvable problem. Although our daughters-in-law are as beautiful as lotus flowers, they are not the least bit happy. From the day of their marriages, they have been deaf to the names of their husbands, what to speak of looking at them. Deaf to the names of their husbands, what to speak of looking at them." Of course, we understand they're referring indirectly to the gopis' parakya bhav, their parakya mood. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. "Where in the world can one find such ladies that find absolutely no joy in being with their husbands? Even to this day, they are proud and show aversion to their towards their husbands. This problem has made us completely miserable. We want to resolve this. If you can solve the problem, your fame will spread all over the world." Understanding the minds of the elderly gopis, Kusamasava, which is another name for Madhumangala, Batu, fell silent. He pretended to be deeply absorbed in meditating on Sarasvati. Today is Sarasvati Puja, so here he is meditating on Sarasvati. By the grace of Sarasvati, she has appeared in this reading, just to remind us of her worshipableness. He pretended to be deeply absorbed in meditating on Sarasvati in order to solve the gopi's dilemma. First, Bhattu acted like a big acharya by spending a long time in silent contemplation before responding. Then, smiling slightly and behaving comically like some big orator, he jokingly said, "O auspicious ladies, do you understand? Do you understand?" Yes. Radhe. "O auspicious ladies, although I am Krishna's friend, my happiness will be ruined if he finds out that I'm helping his antagonist. Therefore, you must keep these things secret and not tell anyone. Please bring some fruit and I will explain why your daughters-in-law are adverse to their husbands." When Bhattu, whose inexhaustible grace and beauty are rarely seen, received the fruit, he thought deeply for a moment and spoke, "O cultured ladies, there are two kinds of defects seen here. One, material, and the other, spiritual. Your daughters are adverse because their husbands are full of material defects such as bad behavior and ugliness. Everyone knows about this. So what is the use of applying the wisdom of astrology to solve this problem? Now listen attentively as I explain the transcendental factors. Here in Vrindavan, there is one yogini who is against you. Her lotus feet are worshipped by the best of yogis. By her incredible mystic power, she can bring anyone under her control, and she can even split the sun in half. That playful yogini is known as Yogamaya. By her illusory potency, she made it look like your sons are married to particular gopis. Yogamaya then propagated the fact among the ignorant, like you," should be in parentheses, "to make them think it was a real marriage. She also created the bad qualities in your sons and the antagonistic mood found in your daughters-in-law. Your daughters and the husbands and their husbands are not fit to live together. Therefore, Yogamaya has personally prohibited your sons from even touching their wives. Using her tremendous power, Yogamaya will soon make your daughters-in-law give up any sense of being married to your sons. But if you are very affectionate toward your daughters-in-law, then that yogini will become favorable and help you." So this is the way that Bhattu is going to be getting the daughters-in-law out of the house, so they have an opportunity to meet with Krishna. "Moreover, if you want your sons to become fortunate, then you should make sure they do not even touch their wives. Your sons are very unhappy when they hear that Krishna attracts their wives and forcibly embraces them with his long serpentine arms. But soon your sons will become very happy and prosperous when their wives glance favorably upon them like the goddess of fortune." "Although, Overwhelmed by Bhattu's words and feeling great distress, the elderly gopis hoped that something auspicious would soon happen. In that mood, the gopis said, "O Bhattu, you are the embodiment of truth. Surely your words are not the statements of a mere child, but rather the wisdom of an omniscient Brahman. Indeed, you are a competent astrologer. Now please show us the power you have obtained by mastering the agamas. Please teach us how to carefully worship the appropriate demigods so that we can prevent that yogini from harassing our sons." Madhu Mangala said, "You can appease that angry yogini by worshipping another demigod who is supremely pure, imperishable, and infallible." Gaining relief from Bhattu's words, the elderly gopis express their appreciation by offering him a valuable necklace. Then the gopis said gleefully, "O Bhattu, you are a mine of the best jewel-like qualities. Please tell us, who is that demigod and what his nickname is? Tell us all the details about worshipping him." Bhattu replied, "O fortunate ones, you are very effulgent and your speech sounds like lovely singing. There is a demigod named Kandarpa who..." Kandarpa means Cupid, huh? "Who resides in Vrindavan as the Kunja Devata, the personified lord of the love groves. His body is color, should be, is the color of a rain cloud. He is ever youthful and transcendental. That yogini, Yogamaya, who enchants all the demigods, always remains submissive to this youthful personality known as Kandarpa. By his sweet will, Kandarpa satisfies the cherished desires of the gopis whose eyes are beautified with kajal." Kajal means the black around the eyes. You don't know. "If you can please this demigod, then you will always be happy. But if you anger him, even Shankara Mahadev cannot save you. That demigod delights in sporting from one forest grove to another, although no one can see him. Those who worship him with unalloyed devotion can see him in meditation. The method of his worship is very difficult and it must be performed at exactly the right time. Only those who perform meritorious work can worship him. Listen attentively as I describe how to worship him. First, you must adorn yourself with very costly jewels and smear your bodies with attractive ointments. Rejecting the opinions of others, you must give up your shyness and go to Vrindavan to pick flowers. You must abandon all other talks and constantly fix your mind only on him. You must be free from any cheating mentality. Then you can worship him according to all the rules and regulations. You should go to one grove after another and worship that youthful Kandarpa 3 times a day with incense, lamps, flowers, and fragrant substances. After the worship is finished, he will lay down on a bed of fresh, tender leaves, remaining awake the whole night with his friends. Besides perfectly fulfilling your cherished desires, this puja will give you the power to control anyone in the world if you do the puja in the morning, noon, and night. There are many mantras to worship this demigod, but the best one is the Gopal Mantra." Gopalmant. We have also Gopalmant, which is meant for worshipping this Kandarpa. If you have faith in me, I will tell you the mantra. The elderly gopis said, O Balacharja, without a mantra, how can one worship Kandarpa? O revered one, may your fame spread in all directions. Please teach us that mantra, and we will give it to our daughters-in-law. Bhattu said, O ladies, you have spoken correctly. Now may that demigod, who possesses the unlimited wealth of 6 opulences, be happy with you. Considering the time and place, I will instruct you in the proper mantra. The mantra is Achintya Mahase Kunja Devatayai Rasat Mane Swaha. I offer myself to the great inconceivable Lord of the love groves, who forever relishes tasty mellows. This concludes the method of worshipping that beautiful and splendorous Kunja Devata. Now go to a lonely place and nicely worship the Kunja Devata. Just as a raging river spills over its banks, similarly, by the flood of his mercy, you will overcome all unfavorable situations. And that way, Yoga Maya will become powerless before you. Everything I told you is in the Agamas and Jyoti Shastra. By doing this, you will also receive my favor. After successfully deceiving the old ladies with these secret teachings, which were laced with many funny hidden meanings, that brahmachari quickly left them. The elderly gopis affectionately accepted the words of that expert talker and returned to their homes. Without envy, they instructed their daughters-in-law, who beamed like the attractive flames of ghee lamps, in the worship of the Kunja Devata. The elderly gopis said, O Boma, an affectionate term for the wife of one's son. You come from a high-class family. Indeed, you are famous for your kindness and refined qualities, which crush the pride of the celestial woman. But we also see many defects in you that are not found even among the women of earth. One of your main faults is your aversion to your husbands. We do not even want to see our enemies having this fault. Therefore, we will tell you a vrat, which we learn from the Brahmin Madhumangala. By happily observing this vrat, you can quickly remove this obstacle of your obstacle to your good fortune, make your husband happy, increase your devotion to him, and please your superiors. You must take a vow to wander through the kunjas of Vrindavan, constantly worshipping Kandarpa, the demigod who fulfills the desires of everyone. So the gopis, not believing their ears, because they it was obvious what their mothers-in-law were going to allow them to be able to do. Not believing their ears, the daughters-in-law adopted a mood of astonishment and displeasure with this suggestion. The young gopis thought, what are they saying? Are our mothers-in-law testing us? Or maybe they have discovered our secret love? Their minds vacillating in confusion, they sat down silently. Before making a response, they wanted to hear their mothers-in-law disclose everything from beginning to end. When the daughters-in-law sat silently, the elderly gopis, in order to hide their defects, from the people in general, privately instructed them in the vows and methods for worshipping the Devata, known as Kandarpa. The younger gopis thought, our mothers-in-law are giving us joy and satisfaction by pouring this rasayan into our ears. Kusumasava has certainly created a grand festival for us. Madhumangala has, and they recognize, because they know that Madhumangala is Krishna's dear friend, so he would certainly be, you know, favoring them by creating a situation where Krishna's desires could be fulfilled. Their bodies glowing with beauty and feeling great relief, the gopis spontaneously replied to their mothers-in-law, O cultured ladies of Vrindavan, are there any wives who would not submissively follow the instructions of their mothers-in-law? Even if we become lean and thin, we are ready to go to the forest and execute this rut. Why should we waste our lives staying at home? We should not waste another minute. Let us go immediately. Your instructions given to increase our fortune sound as sweet as a melodious song. The daughters promised to follow the orders of their mothers-in-law, who no longer prevented them from going to Vrindavan to pick flowers. Every day, those restless, fortunate girls joyfully went to Vrindavan. Instead of chastising them, the elders now praised and encouraged them. With great difficulty, the gopis tried to restrain the chariots of their minds and keep their poise as they walked past their superiors and relatives. Driven by minds permeated with Krishna prema, the gopis quickly arrived in Vrindavan. At that time, Krishna, adorned with a charming pearl necklace, played in a neighboring forest. Infatuated by their totally pure love for Krishna, the gopis pulsated with desire to receive his delightful glance. Meanwhile, back in the village, the Braja Kumaris, unmarried gopis, intensely hankered to please Krishna with their conjugal love, but they were neither old enough nor allowed to go out to worship Kandarpa. The faces of these restless young gopis radiated a pale pink glow due to their bhav. Having recently completed their Katyayani Vrat and receiving Krishna's promise to keep them, these young gopis could no longer keep their patience. Danya Sakhi and the other Braja Kumaris were full of anxiety. Their throats choked up and their gorgeous golden faces turned pale due to frustration. Seeing the distressed condition of their daughters, their aristocratic mothers also felt depressed. Contemplating how to help them, they said, Oh dear daughters, did Yogamaya Devi create some special inauspiciousness in your hearts by giving you an enchanting order? Tarangavati, the daughter of a nurse, said, Hung ho, dear mothers, please listen attentively to my words. Regarding your question, how can you expect all these girls to answer you? If you want to know what is wrong, then listen, I will tell you. This is the custom of a daughter born in a good family. At the right time, I will tell whatever I know. Since I am honest and very close to you all, I can tell you everything as it is. Previously, your daughters worshipped and pleased the famous Yogamaya Devi, who is unattainable by all the demigods. At that time, Yogamaya blessed them all with a divine command. Yogamaya said, Within a short time, all of you will see a very exalted and majestic personality who by the rays of his effulgence derides all other powers. I have never seen such an influential personality. He is like the sun, the Lord of the lotuses. and his body is deep blue in color like a royal bumblebee. He will be your husband, and your power and prestige will exceed the goddess of fortune. Besides following the vow to get a husband, there is something else you should do to achieve success in your endeavor. Yogamaya continued, because you have faith in me, I am affectionately telling this to you. Please be patient and listen as I explain more. When your attachment to other things ceases, then try to follow my instructions. O girls, possessing matchless qualities, in the forest of Vrindavan, there is a goddess named Brinda, who is very compassionate by nature. Since she has the power of fulfillment, she is always thinking how to satisfy the cherished desires of the devotees. Tarangavati Sakhi continued, therefore, dear ladies, it is not a good idea to prevent your daughters from going to Vrindavan. This forest is completely spiritual. By living there, many devotees have achieved the fruits of their austerities. One who serves this forest can immediately attain his desired goal. Please give them permission to go so that they can complete the work directed by Yogamaya Devi. After hearing these words, with great delight, the mothers consented by slightly smiling at their anxious daughters. Obtaining sanction from their mothers, all the young unmarried gopis, like Danya Sakhi, wandered in the various groves of Vrindavan. With the arrival of spring, the different types of Braja gopis enjoyed many hilarious pastimes. The married gopis started the fun by sneaking off to the forest to pick flowers. Then the unmarried gopis, who had previously worshipped Katayani, took permission from their mothers-in-law to worship Kandarpa. Without anyone's knowledge, they also worshipped Brindadevi. Now these intelligent gopis could enter the forest of Vrindavan and attain the intimate association of Krishna. This is a long chapter. Anyway, it's a few pages more. But it's really a nice story, if you don't mind hearing it. Today we also have a lineup of great acharyas who have made their appearances or disappearance. Vishwanath's disappearances today, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, his disappearances today, Raghunath Das Goswami's appearance, and Raghunandan Thakur, his appearance. Raghunandan was the son of Mukunda Das, who Mukunda Das is the incarnation of Vrindadevi. So we're talking about Vrindadevi here. The gopis were worshipping Vrindadevi. So this Mukunda Das was the incarnation of Vrindadevi, and his son Raghunandan Thakur, her previous lila was Kandarpa Manjari. So in the Gaur lila, Raghunandan Thakur, he was renowned on account of his offering the bhog to the deity in the house of Mukunda Das, and the deity actually came down and ate all the prasad. So when Mukunda Das came back, because he had instructed his son to how to offer the bow, and he had to go out for something. So it was the first time that his son had to do that. So when his son offered, Krishna actually came down, because Raghunandan was not seeing, that he was eating, and he started crying, and vowed that he wouldn't eat unless the deity would eat. So then the deity, having compassion upon Raghunandan, who was just a boy, he came down off the altar and ate the whole offering. So when Mukundadas came back and he asked for the prasad, it was like, prasad? What's that? You know? There's no prasad. He ate everything, you know? What do you mean prasad? Then Mukundadas was thinking that Raghunandan must have, you know, absconded with the prasad or something and was making up stories. So then he asked Raghunandan to again make the offering. And meanwhile he was hiding and watching the thing. And so then when the deity came down off the altar and started eating, he offered a laddu, and he started eating, and he ate half the laddu. And then Krishna noticed that Mukundadas was there, so he went up, you know, and froze, or jumped back on the altar or something. I don't know what he did, but he only ate half the laddu. So anyway, that half a laddu is still existing, I think. It's kept very nicely. In which town is that? I forget. You know the town? Where? Srikanda, yeah. Anyhow, that was Raghunandan. It's amazing. And then later, Lord Chaitanya, we'll get back to our story in a second. Lord Chaitanya asked to Mukundadas. It's recorded in, I think it's in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Actually, it's in Chaitanya Bhagavat. It's just a reference of Chaitanya Bhagavat, I think, is mentioned in CC. But he asked to Mukundadas that who is the father? You or Raghunandan? So then Mukundadas answered that actually Raghunandan is my father, because he's the one who has initiated me in the truths of pure devotion like that. So who initiates in the truths of pure devotion? Sometimes we see even in our movement the son will come first, and then somehow or other he'll convince the father or the family to follow. So he becomes the father of the father, or the guru of the father, even in certain respects. Pundarik Vidyanidhi is also his appearance day. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi, you may be knowing, is the reincarnation, the Gaur avatar of Gaur Lila avatar of Rishabhanu Maharaj. And that is Radharani's father. So there's an incident which we won't read. I'll just try to briefly mention it. I may leave out some details, so if you remember something that I'm not telling, then either you can add it or you can forgive me as you like, because I would like to get back to our nice story about the Basant Botsava. Gadadhar Pandit, he was a very strict renunciate from his early childhood. So when Mukundadat Goswami, when he suggested to to Gadadhar to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi. You may remember Pundarik Vidyanidhi is also the one who got his cheeks slapped because he was criticizing within his mind Vajari, who had offered the stiff woolen cloth. What is the name of that festival? You remember? Odhan Shasti, yes. Odhan Shasti. That's when at the beginning of the winter season, when new wool cloths are offered to Jagannath. So the Pujari had offered wool cloths, but it was still stiff, hard, by starch or something. So Pundarik was in his mind criticizing. And Jagannath appeared in his dream. Jagannath Baladev appeared in his dream and was slapping his cheeks. And when he woke up, his cheeks were swollen red from the slapping. But so anyway, this Pundarik, he appeared to Raghunath Das Goswami as a Vishayi, one who is delighting in sensual pleasures, because he was living in quite an opulent setting, you know, beside his opulent couch, you know, was a spittoon for spitting the pond juice, and also hookah was there, hookah for smoking, and very opulent, let's see, decor. Anyhow, so when Raghunath saw him, he thought within his mind that how can I, you know, allow myself to be associated with such a Vishayi? Huh? Gadadhar Pandit. Yeah. So Raghunath's appearance is also today, so. So anyhow, Gadadhar Pandit, did I say Gadadhar Pandit in the beginning at least? I said, okay, alright, thank you. Okay. So Gadadhar Pandit, he was, not favorably disposed to the idea of meeting such a person. Little did they know that, because Gadadhar is Radharani's reincarnation in Gaur-lila, little did he know that this was his, her father, Vrishabhanu Maharaj. So then, Mukundadat, understanding the situation, he recited a sloka from Bhagavat describing Krishna's mercy upon Putana by giving her the position as a mother. So when Pundarik heard this sloka, he went wild in ecstasy of love of Godhead, love for Krishna, and started kicking his feet and throwing himself around in such a way as to knock over the spittoon and all the pond spit went flying everywhere, and all of this nice, you know, white carpeting and everything was spoiled, and knocking over the hookah and breaking the breaking this and that by flailing his arms and legs, and it went on for 6 hours. So, you know, his ecstasy couldn't have been, you know, a make-show. Because I don't think even people, you know, who try to feign ecstasy to gain cheap adoration and distinction, as the sahajiyas sometimes do, I don't think they could do it for 6 hours. Anyhow, so then Gadadhar, by that, came to understand the actual transcendental preponderance of Pundarik Vidyanidhi's spiritual status. And considering that he had committed an offense, he decided to accept initiation from Pundarik only. So Pundarik, who was Vrishabhanu, the father of Radharani, became the guru of Gadadhar Pandit. And Pundarik is also described as that he's coming in the line from Madhavendra Puri, also another branch of the Madhavendra tree. Pundrik Vidyanidhi Kinjai. So anyhow, and Vishnu Priya Devi is there. How old did she live? How long did she live? Did you find out? Huh? Huh? At least 90 years. She was married when she was 14 or 16. Huh? 12? 12 years old? She was married when she was 12. So, and she, when did Mahaprabhu leave? She was 16, so only for 4 years. That means Mahaprabhu married when he was 20. Of course, there's some internal reason for Lakshmi Priya leaving the world before Vishnu Priya had married to Mahaprabhu. In the Nitya Navadvip, in the Nitya Leelas of Lord Gauranga, Lakshmi Priya and Vishnu Priya remained simultaneously as co-wives. But in the Boma Leelas of Lord Chaitanya, Lakshmi Priya, who is the incarnation of Lakshmi Devi herself, Leela Shakti, Neela Shakti, it is described that she wouldn't tolerate her husband, Lord Narayan, taking sannyas, and she would disallow him to do so. And by her power, Mahaprabhu would not be able to take sannyas. So Yogamaya removed her from the scene by the snake bite of separation when Mahaprabhu went to East Bengal to bring back wealth, you know, for the family life. So when he got back, he understood that due to Sachi Devi's lamentation, her despondency, he came to understand that Lakshmi Priya had left the world. So, but Vishnu Priya, she is the incarnation, of course. In Gaura Leela, many different personalities are amalgamated in one individual sarup. So, in many cases, so similarly, Rukmini is there, Radharani is there, a little bit of Radharani is there, is described, because otherwise, how she can associate with Gaura, who is none other than Brijendanandan Krishna. So then also Bhudevi is there. Bhudevi, of whom Bhumi Devi is a partial expansion. So because Bhumi Devi has Vatsalya Bhav toward the inhabitants, her children, the inhabitants of earth, and because she's thinking of the welfare of her children, she allowed Mahaprabhu to take sannyas to benefit the people of this world. But we should note with reverence, with awe and respect, that she was married at the age of 12, being the daughter of Sanatan Mishra. This marriage was arranged. We don't have time to get into reading any of the pastimes, which I wish we could, but anyhow, there's nice pastimes about that in Chaitanya Mangal, if you like to read about the pastimes of Vishnu Priya's marriage, and also a very, very touching leela
described in the same book, Chaitanya Mangal, about Vishnu Priya's lamentation upon Mahaprabhu's taking sannyas, which is a very, very heart-rending lila. So anyhow, she married at the age of 12, and Mahaprabhu left her, you know, to cry for the rest of her life at the age of 16. Her crying for the rest of her life meant from the age of 16 till at least 90 or 100 years old. So for 75 years at least, she was crying and crying and crying in feelings of separation from Mahaprabhu. So much so, actually her tapasya, in the matter of her, what is this? Where? Her tapasya, practically speaking, is unsurpassable. Bhakta Charanamrit has supplied me kindly with a section, a little short passage of Bhakti Ratnakar, wherein that tapasya is described. Each day, Srinivas visited Sri Vishnupriya Devi and observed her exceptional activities. Because of separation from Chaitanya, she never slept at night. You can imagine, she never slept for like 75 years, perhaps, at least during the time when Srinivas was there observing the situation. He observed that she never slept. Not only did she never sleep, but she would just lie on the hard ground if she slept at all, it says. Her golden complexion had grown pale like the new moon. While chanting the names of Hari, she would set aside a grain of rice for each mantra. Oh, for each mantra. This is a mistake, yeah, because it was one round, for each round. If it was just for each mantra, then she could eat up to the neck, you know. It says each mantra. This is wrong. Yeah. So she would set aside a grain of rice for each round that she would chant. So, mind you, later on in the day, only those grains would be soaked, not even cooked, but soaked, and offered to the Lord. The offering was very small, and yet she would eat only a portion of it.
Because she was too much in the mood of lamentation and too much swooning and let's say rolling about on the ground, crying and crying and crying to be bothered to chant, you know, to count the mala and all these things. You know, there's no question of her chanting, 192 rounds. So we doubt seriously that she even by the end of a day accumulated 192 grains of rice to soak, and even that a small portion of that, even if she chanted 64 rounds, maybe she chanted 64 rounds, at least 64 grains of rice, but then she would eat only a small portion of that. Can you imagine soaking only 64 grains of rice? You know, wouldn't amount to much. It almost puts Raghunath Das Goswami's tapasya to shame. Raghunath Das Goswami, after the departure of Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, after the departure of Sanatana Goswami, generally, after Mahaprabhu's disappearance, Raghunath Das Goswami would would eat only fruit, milk, no grains. But after the departure of Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami would drink only 100 grams, one dona, of chach, buttermilk, every alternate day, every other day. But then after Rupa Goswami's departure, Raghunath Das Goswami gave up eating anything. And at that time, it's described how the Brijbasis were lamenting and lamenting upon seeing Raghunath Das Goswami's emaciated condition and his feelings of separation from Mahaprabhu and his dear devotees. Day by day, her health dwindled, yet she always mustered energy to attend to Srinivas during his visit. Soon it was obvious that she remained alone simply to bestow her mercy on Srinivas. His unique fortune was acknowledged by everyone. So, anyhow. So like that, Vishnu Priya Devi is an ocean of mercy upon the fallen conditioned souls. So anyhow, it's getting later and later, it's already 10 o'clock. We haven't really discussed Raghunath Das Goswami, you know, and there's so much that could be discussed about him. It should be mentioned at least that Raghunath Das Goswami is the famous Rati Manjari, who appeared in this world to illustrate the internal process, Antaranga Raghunuga Sadhan Bhakti, in his writings. Although the austerities and devotional practices or performances, I should say, of Raghunath Das Goswami are supra phenomenal, because Mahaprabhu instructed him, Bala na kabi, Bala na puribe, etc. Don't eat nicely, don't dress nicely, don't engage in mundane prattles, mundane gramya katha, you know, and always worship Rana and Krishna within the core of your heart in the land of Braja. So, and he instructed him, Mahaprabhu instructed him, to exemplify pure devotional austerity or pure devotional renunciation. So because he followed strictly the orders of Mahaprabhu, it is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita that his austerity and renunciation was seen to be like, how do you say it? Irremovable? Unremovable? Like lines on the stone. He was so strict in his following of the instruction of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So although these things are very wonderful, the example that he set as the Prayojan Acharya in the matter of relinquishing all attachments to material sense gratification. Even when he would take the one dona, one leaf cup of charge every other day, he would condemn himself that why am I still so attached to sense gratification? Because as long as the body and soul remain together, some sense gratification has to be there. Just like Mahaprabhu would say that if I had any love for Krishna at all, I would not go on eating to maintain my fly-like existence. Rather, I would stop eating so that I could leave this world and fly to Krishna's lotus feet at once if I had any love for Krishna. So in the same way, in the same spirit, Raghunath Das Goswami would contend himself for even taking one little leaf cup of buttermilk. And even one time his associate, what was his name, Das? I think his name was Das. One Das Prabhu, you know, one Das Prabhu, he brought one big size leaf cup full of buttermilk because he was thinking that Raghunath Das Goswami, how can he sustain his life on just one little leaf cup? So better I should give him a bigger size leaf cup so that at least he can have something more to nourish himself with. So then when he presented this leaf cup to Raghunath Das, so Raghunath Das, out of curiosity, because, huh, what is this? This is such a big leaf cup, such a big size dona. Where did you get this nice dona? So then Das Prabhu told that I got this dona from Sakhi Stali. Sakhi Stali? You know where is Sakhi Stali? What is Sakhi Stali? Because in Anangamanjari Samputika it is mentioned that there is no one who is more dedicated, exclusively dedicated to the service of Srimati Radharani than Srimati Rati Manjari. She is the supreme, emblem of Radha Dasyam. So as such, Raghunath Das Goswami, being that very Rati Manjari, when he heard the word Sakhi Stali, Sakhi Stali is the place of whom? Don't say it. Chandravali. Chandravali Gopi. I shouldn't even be saying. No. But anyhow. So, because he heard that this dona, this leaf cup, had been taken from Sakhi Stali, Chandravali's place, so he immediately threw it, contents and all, as far away from him as possible, and instructed Das that never ever bring me another such leaf cup from the Sakhi Stali again. So anyway, this shows her resolute attachment to the lotus feet of Srimati Radharani, which is exemplary. In certain respects is more exemplary than his supramundane, supraphenomenal austerities. But the greatest, noteworthy contribution of Raghunath Das Goswami, aside from his renovating Radhakund, because he is the Mahant, the supreme Mahant of Radhakund, they celebrate his disappearance. I think his disappearance is just before Kartik, isn't it? On which day do you remember?
3 days before Sarah.
3 days. 3 days. It's on the Dwadasi or something, isn't it? Yeah. Okay. So anyhow, but aside from his contribution to the Vaishnav, to the Gaudiya Vaishnav world in particular, his construction of the ghats and everything at Radhakund, his greatest contribution is his transcendental writings, Manashiksha and Vilapkushamanjali is unsurmountable, unsurpassable in the matter of, and what is it? There's the whole ontology of it's slipping my mind right now. Stavavali. Anyhow. So, Vrajvilastava. So anyway, it is mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that Mahaprabhu instructed to Sarup Damodar Goswami to write a treatise on rasa tattva, the cultivation of rasa, in the matter of rag bhajan, and to divide it into two categorical departments. One is to for the gradual the gradual course of Raganuga Sadhan Bhakti, which deals with a more ritualistic approach, but the ritualistic approach, because in the Vaidhi Sadhana, there's according to Pancharatrika Vidhis, in the deity worship, etc., the chanting of various mantras and various methods of worship, etc., they constitute the ritualistic performance of worship in the Vaidhi Bhakti. But in the rag, this particular process of rag bhajan, the very same sort of ritualistic approach is there, but it's directed toward or applied to the entities of Braja, so that the person who is more acclimated to the ritualistic standards in the Vaidhi system can gradually become acquainted with the realm of Braja, the personalities of Braja, the type of mantra, upasana, and mantra dhyan, which will, pertain to the elements of Braja, so that gradually he can develop an attraction which will engender lobha or greed for the thing. So that type of Raganuga Sadhana was given to Vakreshwara Pandit and was recorded in the Padatis of Gopal Guru Goswami and Dhyan Chandra Goswami. So the other aspect of cultivation of rasa in the matter of rag bhakti was instructed by Sarup Damodar to Raghunath Das Goswami. And that is called, there's the Bahiranga, which was given to Vikreshwara Pandit, and then there's the Antaranga process of Rag Bhajan, which was given to Das Goswami. So Das Goswami, let's see, illustrates this process of Antaranga, or esoteric, which means, esoteric means that which is giving the revelation, which reveals the truths of the standards of selfless, loving, devotional service attitude within the heart by association with expressions of such devotion found in or illustrated by the books of Raghunath Das Goswami. You'll find especially in Vilap Kushamanjali, you'll find the highest expressions of Raghunath Das Goswami's innermost desires for service at the feet of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, Raghunath Das Goswami is described as our Prayojan Acharya. He exemplifies the highest zenith of prema, not Krishna prema, but Radha prema. Radha Krishna prema. Higher than Krishna prema is Radha prema. So that was exhibited and illustrated and also exemplified by Raghunath Das Goswami in his writings and in his life. So also Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's appearance day is today, and he's the greatest stalwart in the matter of reviving the Krishna consciousness movement after the departure of Srila Jiva Goswami. Ram Roy will read something about that, but before we read about that, I don't want to lose this golden opportunity to read a few pages about the Vasanotsava, if you don't mind. So, where were we now? Yes. By Bhattu's mercy, by Madhu Mangal's mercy, the Brajagopis, the Kishoris, and the Kumaris, both groups of gopis, those who were married and those who were yet to be married, unmarried gopis, all of them got the chance to get out of the prison of their mothers' and mother-in-law's houses to enter into the pastime forest of Braja for the purpose of, let's say, fulfilling the very essential purpose of their existence in the matter of facilitating and assisting Radha and Krishna's transcendental pleasure pastimes. The tender petals of the kunda flowers of spring broke the fierce tusk of the elephant of winter. This is Kavi Khanapur. And fortunately, Banu Swami, I think this portion was translated by Banu Swami. Either Banu Swami or Subhag Maharaj. Maybe it's Subhag Maharaj. Because one portion was, I think the later portion was by Subhag Maharaj. Huh? Banu Swami. So this is more than halfway through the book, so it must be Banu Swami. But anyway, of course, and Mahanidhi Swami has nicely edited it so as to enhance its poetic value. I was told by Mahanidhi Swami that the language in which this was rendered by Kavi Kanapur is so difficult and can be taken in so many, there's so many alternative meanings that it's like pick and choose which meaning you prefer, because all of them make sense. That is why he's called as Kavi, you know, because he's, Kavi means poet, so he has such a amazing poetic intelligence. So anyway, you'll notice that this rendering is also quite poetic and sweet. The juncture of winter and spring. No, where were we? The tender petals of the kunda flowers of spring broke the fierce tusk of the elephant of winter. The spring season arrived in the form of a playful lion cub showing his teeth as the stamens of the flowers. The southern breezes forced the chills of winter to depart. It appeared as if the nostrils of personified time had now opened and started breathing in and out. The juncture of winter and spring seemed like the period between boyhood and adolescence. The tender creepers exploded with new buds. The cuckoo sang with sweet melody, but not the fifth note of cuckoo, cuckoo, which lovers murmur at union. Though the southern breezes had begun, they were weak due to their lingering attachment to the Malayan hills. It seems the buds, birds, and breezes simultaneously awaited the departure of the winter season. The creepers looked like pregnant ladies waiting to give birth to fresh flowers. With their gentle humming, the bumblebees inquired repeatedly from all directions about the location of spring. Moreover, immediately upon smelling the fragrance, the cuckoos took shelter in the treetops to savor the fresh mango blossoms. After eating them, they made sweet, drawn-out tunes of cuckoo, cuckoo. It seems the cuckoos sang softly in fear that the spring season may not arrive with their favorite food of fresh mango sprouts. The forests welcomed the spring season with the sweet fragrances of fresh flowers. With the disappearance of winter, the forest beamed with delight like a man feeling fresh and clean after bathing. The creepers appeared to be smeared with rich aromas. Overwhelmed with joy, the birds sang happily. It seemed that the wives of the direction smiled favorably at the arrival of the spring season. Sandalwood paste appeared as moonshine to pleasantly anoint the night. The Malayan breezes, moving here and there, carried the sweet flavor of fragrant flowers. The bumblebees, returning to their hives, appeared to be tied up together as they moved about with each other. The mango trees, filled with tiny bumps of joy from the touch of the awakening Madhavi creepers. What more can be said about the arrival of spring? It seemed as if Kandarpa had just changed his body. Vrindavan is beautiful, with the different periods of the six seasons manifest in different places. But to nourish Krishna's sweet pastimes, the sequence of seasons sometimes changes to suit his needs. For example, sometimes the dewy season comes after winter, or spring season follows the rainy season. Sometimes all the seasons combine, approach the Lord and ask if they can serve Him simultaneously. With the arrival of spring, our Shamsundar, greedy for pleasure and full of prema, decided to stage a wonderful pastime to fulfill the desires of the girls of Gokul, whose hearts surged with Sringar Ras. The hearts of the gopis moved with the speed of the wind to meet the Prince of Braja, who embodies all good fortune. The Vana Devis incited the forest to explode with unlimited beauty and fresh fragrances. Krishna, the ocean of elegance, appeared like a dramatic artist dressed in colorful garments. The Chamari deer prepared the stage by sweeping the forest floor with their bushy tails. The honey nectar dripping from the flowers moistened the rich soil. Wandering Kasturi deer scented the air with the heady fragrance of musk. Swarms of intoxicated bees danced in mid-air and buzzed among the flowering creepers. On Vasant Panchami, which is today, remember, the first day of spring, Shyam Sundar, whose joyfully sweet and sportive nature spread in all directions, filled the horizon with the reflection of his beautiful blue complexion. By his inconceivable potency, spring burst into bloom throughout the land of Vrindavan. The Brajbasis mistook the nectar shower of Krishna's sweet beauty to be an unexpected monsoon rain. The eyes, ears, and minds of the Brajbasis tinged with joy upon hearing that spring had arrived and that Krishna hankered to enjoy a festival. The hearts of the moon-faced gopis throbbed with anxiety to meet their beloved. Overpowered by the intoxication of spring and a strong desire to attend the festival, Radhika, Chandravali, Shyamadevi, and all their respective girlfriends abandoned their shyness and ran to the forest. With great love and affection, Vrinda Devi and her Vana Devis appropriately decorated Radhika and the gopis for the joyous festival of spring. They dressed them in colorful clothing, fresh flowers, and the 16 types of items of ornaments. The gopis remembered the boon that Krishna had given them when he snatched their clothes while they bathed in the Yamuna. Those were the unmarried girls. At that time, Krishna said, "O dear Sakis, in some future night, you will enjoy confidential pastimes with me." Because the gopis had fixed their minds on the desire to attain Krishna, they felt a moment to be like a million millenniums. The Vana Devis were amazed at the sight of the assembled gopis that looked like a garden full of rows and rows of the best quality golden creepers. The Vana Devis dressed the gopis, their revered objects of love, in clothing suitable for the spring festival. Vrinda Devi felt very joyful as she personally decorated Radhika with flower ornaments. She set white lilies in Radhika's hair and placed a bakul garland across her hairline that seemed to kiss Radha's forehead. Then Vrinda Devi adorned Radha's hair part with deftly placed red Ashok flowers, hung mango buds over her ears, and covered her breast with a Vasanti garland. Due to their enthusiasm to enjoy the festival of spring, the Vanadevis competed with each other in order to quickly finish their work. They bragged to each other, "I will do the dressing." Another one said, "No, I will do it." As a final touch, they smeared the bodies of Chandravali and other gopis with sandalwood pulp and offered them splendid flower garlands. The gorgeous gopis further beautified the forest. The gopis wrapped their bodies in saris covered with gold jari. They wore brightly colored blouses and veils of the finest soft cloth. They chewed tambula, smeared sandalwood pulp on their bodies, and sported fragrant flower garlands. The different articles used to adorn the gopis came from the desire trees and creepers growing abundantly everywhere in Vrindavan. The desire trees also produced the flower bombs for celebrating Holi. These bombs, made of different colors, perfumed powders packed in lac, were so fragile that they would break open just by breathing on them. So how could they be thrown? The desire trees provided other weapons such as flower bows and arrows, pitchkaris, that's jeweled syringes for squirting liquid substances, like they do sometimes in the holy festival, and musk paste. When spring appeared, Batangi, a Kinari goddess who is an acharya of music, and her female ensemble of expert veena players came to play for the festival. The Vasant rag, which is a springtime rag, personified, accompanied Matangi as an attractively dressed woman. The personified forms of Sapta Swara means seven notes, and Shruti, marginal notes, also followed her. Batangi approached Radhika, the greatest among the lotus-eyed gopis, having beautiful, bashful bodies overflowing with affection. Although she is an excellent speaker, Batangi flooded with happiness and fell silent when she stood before Radhika. Seeing this, Vrinda said, "Hey Radhe, you are an unlimited reservoir of the best qualities. Please have faith in my words when I say that these ladies are fantastic musicians." Pointing to Matangi, Vrinda said, "This is Matangi, the master of all masters of music. Even the Kinaris, famous celestial singers, learned from her. O supremely cultured and worshipable lady, whose mind will not be elated by participating in this flourishing festival of spring? Batangi has come here along with all her musical paraphernalia just to please you. Her associates are expert in playing veena. Here is Vasant rag, pleasant and elegant, with her crown, her jewel crown, deep blue dress, and the peacock feather in her hair. She is feeding soft, fresh mango buds to the cuckoos. By nature, she is maddened with ecstasy." Seeing Vasant rag displaying an irresistible joy, Radhika remembered Shamsundar and looked at her curiously. Dressed as a young girl, Vasant rag considered herself fortunate to have received a glance from Radharani. Then Matangi, the expert musician who walks with the grace of a she-elephant said, O beloved of Krishna, who vanquished Kaliya by dancing on his hoods, the 12 associates of Shruti and the 7 associates of Swara have come with me in order to serve your lotus feet. Just hear how their singing far surpasses that of the Kinaris. On hearing their artistic singing, Lalita said joyfully, Hey Sangeeta Devi, a second name for Matangi, even the wives of the king of the Kinaras could not equal their excellence in singing. Matangi replied, O Lalita, Shruti will not manifest in a voice full of mucus, like Indra's voice, full of mucus. Regarding Venus, Brahma created 2 types, one fretted and one non-fretted. There are 22 shrill notes in a non-fretted Veena and 7 in a fretted one. What more can I say? O worshipable one, soon you can test them yourself by glancing over the Shrutis. Once you hear the 6th note along with its 4 Shrutis, then conviction will remove your doubts. Although pleasant to hear, it is impossible to comprehend. Saying this, Matangi, the expert musician, sang the tonic note Sajja and its 4 distinct marginal notes by using the unfretted Veena. The marginal notes could be distinguished, manifesting themselves according to the pitch of the Veena. The strings of the unfretted Veena can be played to give the correct intonation, which is as reliable as the Vedas. After Matangi pleased everyone with her singing, a Sakhi named Sangeet Vidya spoke jokingly with hidden intentions. She said, Matangi, you have very expertly sung the 4 marginal notes along with the Veena, but you did not sing even a single microtone of the 7th or the 2nd note of the scale. Of course, knowledge of the notes is very difficult for human beings. But Lalita Sakhi, Radhika's dear friend, can sing all the divisions of the notes. If you want, Lalita can demonstrate her singing perfection. Though you may be unfamiliar with the marginal notes of each note because they tend to blend in the note, Lalita can reveal all the 22 marginal notes separately by her knowledge of the sound of each microtone. When she spoke in this way, the forest deity said, O Sangeeta Vidya, the knowledge of the music that Matangi has just recited originates from the mouth of Brahma. But what you have spoken is beyond the universe manifested by Brahma. But both systems are faultless. Radhika worried that Matangi may have felt offended by this conversation, so knitting her eyebrow, she said, Hey Sangeet Vidya, with false intelligence, you are a liar, so you should stop speaking. Clearly, distinguishing the marginal tones as Matangi has just sung could never be done by Lakshmi, the demigods, and what to speak of Lalita Sakhi. Therefore, Matangi is the best of musicians. Now let her satisfy Vrindadevi and the forest deities with her singing. Vrindadevi said, Matangi, until Krishna arrives, you should not sing the Vasant Rag. You can sing another rag with an attractive new melody. According to the request, Matangi exquisitely sung the Bela Beli Rag, which flowed like a pool of water from the ocean of Rasa. She produced five varieties of marginal notes by mixing her voice with the sound of the four types of Venus. The festival Mahati, the festive Mahati and the playful Kavilasika, the tortoise-shaped Kachapi, these must be different types of Venus. Yeah, four types of Venus, yeah. And the broad-bodied Swarmandilaka. That's the kind I play. Swarmandilaka. That's my favorite. The musicians played each microtone exactly in pitch with her voice, and thus satisfied the ears of everyone. The powerful singing attracted music, and the vibration of the Venus at the festival transported everyone into a realm of divine bliss. Sri Radha, there's only a few more pages, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more pages. If you have to go, no problem. But I'm going to sit here and finish this story because it's a great story, even if I'm not the best reader. Hopefully we'll finish before noon. And then, you know, don't forget Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Hare Krishna. So anyhow, what is it now? Or if you like, it's up to you. You decide. We could let the kirtan go on. And we could move to the side somewhere and finish the story as you like. What do you think? Huh? Should I just keep reading or what? Kirtan, huh? What do you think? Kirtan? Yeah, kirtan. This is also kirtan. Holy hair. Okay, so anyway, I'll read a little more, at least. Kirtan is nice for public, kirtan for the masses, philosophy for the classes, and lila katha for the intimate few. But this is such nice thing. Anyhow, where are we now? Yes, okay. Sri Radha, the gopis, Brinda Devi, and the Van Devis listened with rapt attention to the sterling performance of Matangi Devi. Her singing, backed by veenas, mridangas, flutes, gongs, and drums, vibrated so sweetly that even the demigods fell into enchantment. The music floated through the air for a long distance. Anyone who heard it felt invigorated throughout his body. His body. It's not a capital, but we can understand that Krishna is going to be hearing it. So, hearing Matangi's musical concert with its wonderful rhythm and tune, Sringara Ras personified entered the gopis' hearts and caused their lotus petal eyes to bloom wide. The gopis looked nervously from side to side like frightened deer in a forest. As the gopis stood on the forest path listening to the Vasant Rag, one of Radhika's sakis took the form of that rag and sang happily. Excuse me. Hare Krishna. Upon hearing that rag, who? Nandikishore, the embodiment of unlimited bliss, initiated a unique spring festival which no one had ever seen before. The gopis absorbed their minds in Krishna when they saw him approaching them with a desire to enjoy. The sweetness of their beautiful bodies increased as fresh waves of ecstasy rose within them. One gopi said, "O Radhika, your eyes are shining with the same excitement that you reveal when intimately enjoying with Krishna. Indeed, Krishna always reigns as the Lord of your heart. Coming before us as personified spring, Krishna is full of ecstasy and dressed as a daring, dramatic dancer. He is carrying various paraphernalia for sporting. Just see how that proud Cupid shines among his friends. He looks like the full moon surrounded by its entourage of stars. O Radhe, how much can persons like us describe the extent of your glorious good fortune? Look, look, his effulgent white turban appears especially splendid, sitting obliquely on his head. It is decorated with bunches of flowers, sprinkled with fragrant reddish powder, and surrounded by buzzing bumblebees shaking his peacock feather. Tiny fresh mango flowers hang from his ears, which are slightly elongated from the weight of his elegant jeweled earrings. His earrings swing enchantingly to cast exotic reflections on his cheeks. The beautiful Malati garland, mixed with some sweet Tulsi Manjaris, surrounds his neck. His curly dark blue hair is tied back ready for sporting. Krishna wears glittering yellow garments just suitable for his spring pastimes. His jeweled waist bells dance, and a sachet of camphor is tucked in his attractive gem-studded belt. Natural belts made from jute encircle his handsome hips. The ankle bells on Krishna's lotus feet are jingling a sweet tune, Runu Junu, Runu Junu. While listening to the Vasant Rag, Krishna held a flute in his hand, in his left hand, and a ball of red powder in his right hand. Subal and other close friends stood beside him. Relishing that sweet song, Krishna moved his head in time with the tune. His eyes rolled in intoxication as if tired from conjugal pleasure. Some cowherd boys offered him fresh tambula wrapped in golden palm leaves. While relishing the tambula, Krishna's lips turned reddish from the drops of betel juice. Soon Krishna and his boyfriends inaugurated the spring festival of Holi by singing, dancing, and throwing balls of fine reddish powder in all directions. The lightweight, sweet-smelling powder just floated in the air. As it gradually fell down, it beautifully colored and scented Krishna's turban, hair, eyelids, and tilak. Krishna's friends sang charchari and dvipadika songs in the Vasant Rag with clear marginal notes and notes in the three scales. In this way, they blissfully danced and played while repeatedly throwing red powder balls at each other. One gopi said to Radhika, "Look, just see, the unconscious things have come alive from hearing their singing." Overjoyed by the glance of Krishna, the forest creepers display ecstatic symptoms. The gentle breezes from the Malayan hills appear as a guru to teach the forest creepers how to dance. With their new leaves, they exhibit various mudras, hand positions, to go along with the song of the bees. When someone tries to pick the honey sweet flowers, the creepers seem to shiver in fear with their quivering buds. Their blossoming flowers appear like exuberant laughter, and they show anger by frowning, with their eyebrows appearing as the swarms of bees. One creeper, seeing Krishna's impulsive nature and being moved by the wind, covered her flower cluster breast with the leaf of her hand, of her left hand. With the leaf of her right hand, she beckoned her friends for help while shyly smiling with the blossoming flower of her face. Therefore, Radhika, I tell you, in this Vrindavan, how is it possible to remain patient and control one's intelligence during such an ecstatic holy festival? Understanding Radhika's inner mood, Shama Sakhi said, "O Vrindadevi, why are you agitating us while giving bliss to the moon-like Shyam Sundar? You know how we can never go against your will. So quickly arrange the joyous holy festival and thereby bring unlimited happiness to all of us. By nature, the door of shyness creates an obstacle in the houses of the married gopis' bodies. At the same time, their eagerness to love Krishna is so strong that even an axe cannot cut it. Their minds are constantly full of anguish. Although they tolerate it with unrivaled patience, they are in a terribly unfortunate condition. To remove their misfortune, the gopis should definitely do some worship on this auspicious day of the spring festival. During the time of picking flowers, it will be easy for us to perform that puja. O Sakhis, you are the embodiments of auspiciousness and expert in all the arts. Let us celebrate the festival of spring with that honorable prince of Braja." After hearing Shama Sakhi's timely words arousing conjugal love, Vrinda spoke to the queen of Vrindavan, "O Radhika, I understand that in name, beauty, form, and gentle behavior, there is one other Sakhi who is eligible to hear the songs of Matangi. Just now, Chandravali and Charuchandra Sakhi are making some curious sounds as they advance with their party to celebrate the festival of Holi. It appears that they are illuminating this mango grove with a pleasant effulgence. Indeed, Matangi, the embodiment of all the Shrutis and Swaras of the Vasant Rag, has become successful by intoxicating everyone with her joyous singing. Although also immersed in that ecstasy, she has not lost her self-control." After honoring Radhika with her words, Vrinda engaged in the service of Chandravali. She told Matangi to sing pleasing tunes with the expanded Shrutis that always manifest in spring. Matangi's singing defeated the splendor of the rising golden sun. Within a moment, the desire to observe a grand festival arose from the desire tree of Chandravali's heart. Then Chandravali, with her Sakhis, joyfully threw colors to celebrate Holi. They squirted forceful streams of fragrant colored liquids on each other with elegant jewel inlaid pitchkaris, means syringes. The streams of water were sensually pleasing mixtures of sandalwood paste, camphor, kasturi, kumkum, and golak diluted in water. In Govinda Lilamrit, it's mentioned that they also mix mud, which gives it a good splat, you know. It makes it so that it's almost impossible to get off, because they mix mud with the water also. While squirting each other, they sang and danced around in time with the music of the Vasant Rag. In great fun, they also threw flower bombs of scented red powder on each other, being driven by the Cupid elephant of blissful enjoyment, Chandravali and her gopi friends, whose beauty derided millions of heavenly goddesses, happily sported in the spring festival. Meanwhile, Sri Radha, whose joyful, captivating smile is sweeter than honey, surprised everyone by her behavior. First, she cast restless glances in the direction of Krishna, and then she looked at Chandravali. Then suddenly, for no apparent reason, Radhika abruptly wandered away on the pretext of picking flowers. The Prince of Vrindavan, who disseminates limitless joy, played holy with his young friends while dancing down the road toward the forest where the gopis had assembled. Batu jumped around continuously while raising and lowering his head in a funny way as he led the party. The necklaces on his chest swung pleasantly from his comic movements. While making everyone laugh, Batu, Madhumangala, looked in all directions as if searching for something. In the distance, Batu heard the sounds and laughter of another holy festival. He heard the sweet jingling of the gopis' ankle bells and bangles as they rhythmically danced through the forest. He also heard the music of veenas, mridangas, and murtajas mixing with the sweet singing of Chandravali, Charuchandra, and other sakis as they stood in a circle clapping their hands. The blend of these sounds created a charming concert of enchanting music. Hearing that sound increased Madhumangala's enthusiasm to relish the holy festival. In a blissful mood, he spoke to his dear friend Krishna. "O Krishna, is it the echo of our own singing that we hear? Or is it someone else's sweet songs challenging ours? If it is not our singing, then let us find out who it is." Adorned with gems and ornaments, Krishna, the crest jewel of handsome youths, replied to Batu, "O graceful one, that music is from someone else. But how come this music is mixing with ours, and at the same time, it should be at the same time. It's an editorial mistake. That music is from someone else, but how come this music is mixing with ours and at the same time overpowering it? Go find its source." Feeling ecstatic, Batu ran quickly toward the jingling sound. There, he saw Radharani, who is praised as the crest jewel of all beautiful women, including Lakshmi, who has charming simplicity who has reddish palms more delicate than Java flowers, who graces the earth with her transcendental form, and who appears like the personified beauty of spring picking the Madhavi flowers. Bhattu said, O impudent Lalita, why do you sit on a mountain of pride? It is astonishing that you are acting so offensively. Don't you know that today is the first day of the spring festival? My friend Krishna is just nearby, anxious to enjoy many pastimes in this Madhavi grove. Therefore, we have not picked any flowers in this garden. You, however, are so arrogant that you have taken all the Madhavi leaves and flowers which were meant for Krishna. Are you not familiar with the snake-like arms of my friend who crushes the pride of Kandarpa? Acha, all right. Soon you will come to know. Just wait here while I go tell him what you have done. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Only 8 more pages. Running back to Krishna, Bhattu said, My dear friend, it seems your opulent spring festival will soon reach its climax. Vasant Lakshmi, the personified beauty of spring, and all of her expanded potencies are not far from here. With various tasteful arrangements, she gives new life to the joyous festival of spring. The unique singing of the gopis, which is accompanied by mridangas, veenas, cymbals, and horns, cannot be found anywhere on earth. What to speak of earth, even the greatest celestial singers cannot comprehend it. Besides that, they have collected more paraphernalia to celebrate holy than can be found anywhere else in the creation of Brahma. The people of this world cannot even imagine it. Alas, I have seen great fun. Krishna, although you are the son of the king of Vrindavan, the size of your holy festival cannot compare with theirs. Krishna replied, O Bhattu, why are you glorifying and showing so much respect to the enemy? You should praise your own camp and not give them any importance. Of course, I can understand the inner mood of your heart. It appears that you have become bewildered from drinking the honey wine, and therefore you are acting like an intoxicated person. Madhumangala said, There is an Ayurvedic medicine known as Kushamasava, but I am not that Kushamasava. That's another name for Madhumangala anyway. I mean to say that I am not the honey wine made from the kusuma flower, which people drink and become intoxicated. Yet somehow people get intoxicated just by drinking my words. In other words, he's accusing Krishna of becoming intoxicated. Krishna said, well done, my friend. If you have not lost your enthusiasm, then go back and see what the gopis are up to. We'll meet up with you later. Overwhelmed with joy, the humorous Bhattu returned to the gopis. Then he said boldly, O dear Lalita, foul player or mischievous Lalita Sakhi, on the order of my lotus-eyed friend, you should immediately stop picking our Madhavi flowers and get out of this forest. Otherwise, you will be severely punished. Lalita said, O shameless, deceitful Brahmin boy, why are you spoiling your aristocratic birth by blaspheming others? The flawless wives of the gopas have gathered under this Ashok tree on the bank of the Yamuna in order to worship Vasant Madan Cupid on this auspicious day of the spring festival. This tradition comes down through a long line of well-behaved, gentle souls. Today, the jewel-like heroine, Radhika, who is the most chaste housewife in Vrindavan, who is highly moral, and who possesses all good qualities, has also joined us. Although Radhika has many maidservants, she has personally come to perform this important Madan Cupid Puja. In other words, she could have engaged the maidservants to do such things. But she decided that she would come and take up the task herself. So why have you come here blubbering like a crazy fellow? Bhattu said, Are Lalita, apart from Hari, what other Cupid is there? Krishna easily cuts down the pride of Cupid, maddens everyone with desire, and is always intoxicated by it himself. Ignoring the real Cupid, why have you become attached to worshipping some mundane Cupid? Obviously, you must be crazy. Listen, I will do you a favor and be the priest for your Madan Puja. I will chant the benedictory mantras and guide you in performing splendorous worship of Cupid. Now come along and I will take you to him. Radhika said, Hey Lalita, this expert Brahman is certainly worthy of our worship. Tell Chandravali and Charuchandra to bring good fortune to our village by respectfully worshipping this priest. Overcome with the spirit of holy, Chandravali and Charuchandra forcibly grabbed Bhattu and covered him from head to toe with varieties of red and purple colors to make him look like Bhatturaj, Shiva, and Shiva, the king of ghosts. Excuse me. Sorry, my reading is a little faulty. Madhumangala screamed, Hey Krishna, intoxicated with the joy of holy, the shameless gopis have gone crazy. I cannot run away because they have blinded me with sindur, kumkum, and other fragrant powders. I am also stunned from the color of water they are throwing over me. Krishna, quickly save me before they commit the sin of killing a Brahmin on this auspicious day of holy. Hearing Bhattu's loud crying in the distance, Krishna understood that the simple girls of Vrindavan had diminished his reputation. Running there quickly with his friends, Krishna said, Hala, hala, aho, what a funny scene. The proud gopis glanced at Krishna with a mixed mood of fear, respect, and shyness. Seeing Bhattu sad, silent, and totally defeated, Krishna, pretending to be angry, said, Hung ho, why have you love-blinded ladies abused and harassed my innocent friend? Which lowly person is responsible for this offense? Now you will be justly punished. Krishna, an expert fighter, attacked the gopis by hitting them between the breast with a volley of Ashok flower balls. The celestial demigoddesses enthusiastically glorified Krishna. Afterwards, a fierce fight broke out between the gopas and the gopis. They threw fragrant red powder balls and squirted each other with heavenly scented colored water that felt soft and soothing. A barrage of colors blanketed all directions. Being light in weight, the colored powders just floated and swirled around in the sky to block the sun and create dense darkness. Although nobody could see each other, both sides fought equally. Suddenly, Krishna boldly entered the phalanx of the gopis, vibrating like a sweet sound of Cupid's drum. Krishna's flute resounded triumphantly during the Battle of Eros. The gopis fought heroically in that war against their beloved Shyam. To counteract the weapon of Krishna's enchanting smile, the gopis surrounded him and shot him with sharp arrows, with the sharpened arrows of their sidelong glances. somehow Krishna mounted a ferocious counter-offensive and got free from the clutches of the gopis. But being greedy for more pastimes, Krishna pulled back the bowstring of his dancing eyebrows and shot the gopis with the sampraswapana, sleep-inducing. Swapana actually means dreaming, isn't it? He had to sleep in order to dream, I guess so. Arrow of his glance. Instantly, the gopis felt dizzy and drowsy. Totally fatigued, they yawned and rolled their eyes lazily. Slumping forward, they fell asleep with their chins resting on their chests. Seeing her army stunned and immobilized, Chandravali, the commander-in-chief of the doe-eyed ones, boldly stepped forward to display her prowess. She tried to pierce Krishna's heart with her fluttering eyelids and arrow-like glances. Attempting to enchant the enchanter of the world, she locked Shamsundar in a tight embrace with her snake-like arms. After some time, Krishna gave up his rapture and resumed his attack on the phalanxes of the gopis, kissing them, snapping their necklaces, and ripping their clothes. Krishna appeared like an elephant in rut, trumpeting joyfully while trampling clumps of lotuses in a forest. The battlefield looked astonishing after the fog of colored powders settled. Red powder completely covered both the gopis and the sporting field. The colored water and musk drops dripping off the bodies of the gopis muddied the ground. The holy battlefield is a holy war. Now they have perverted reflections of holy wars. The holy battlefield appeared to be sprinkled with the blood from an elephant devastated by an angry lion. The musk drops on the ground looked like bumblebees smelling that blood. Lying on the ground, the fallen pitchkaris of the gopis looked like the teeth and bones of that elephant scattered across the forest floor. The gopis' defeat drowned Manu Mangala in an ocean of happiness. Raising his arms, he joyfully danced around and shouted, "Hee-hee, well done, Krishna, bravo. In my whole life, I have never felt so good. Oh, Murlidhar, that's what they get for putting your dear friend into such extreme distress." Should I go on reading? Huh? Yeah. Please excuse me, but actually I can't read out loud very well. Even since my childhood, my mother had to bring in a specialist to teach me how not to allow my eyes to race ahead of my, because if my eyes race ahead down the line before my mouth, you know, speaks the words that I've already read, sometimes my mouth starts speaking words that I read, before I finished the sentence, you know. So they had to teach me, you know, how. So therefore, I'm pointing to keep my eyes from going ahead and stuff. But still, I get messed up. So forgive me for that. Hare Krishna. Overlook my mistakes, please. Where are we now? Okay. Just see how the gopis' blouses are torn and their carefully strung necklaces are crushed to dust. All their puja paraphernalia is strewn here and there. Their hair, faces, and breasts are covered with colors. They got just what they deserved. But alas, my dear friend, we better watch out, because they can outwit anyone in Brahma's creation. If they again join forces with your leader Radharani, they will violently attack us in great numbers. Driven by anger, those gopis who are hostile by nature could do anything to us. So let us run away from here before that happens. While smiling, some cowherd boys said, "Talkativeness is Batu's natural defect. Because of his fickle mind, 1 minute he acts boldly, and the next moment he shivers in fright. Oh Krishna, console Batu and keep him from panicking and becoming disturbed again." Krishna said, "Oh Kushamasava, give up your cowardice. Show me those gopis whom you fear. Why should you be afraid in my presence?" Feeling reassured and confident, Kusumasava continued the battle. Boldly jumping forward, he pointed toward the gopis and said, "This way, this way." Krishna and the cowherd boys went to a garden of Madhavi creepers, wherein Radharani, Lalita, and other sakis picked flowers. In great joy, the gopis attacked Hari with millions of restless, sidelong glances. Krishna shot back the arrow of his love-laden glance. Hitting Radhika's breast, that arrow pierced the armor of her shyness to release a splendor that radiated in all directions. Looks like they're playing Holi already. Somewhere. Radhika retaliated with the arrow of her sidelong glance, which was coated with the deadly poison of the kajal surrounding her beautiful blue eyes, and sharpened by her brightly beaming smile. That arrow mercilessly pierced the heart of Krishna. Seeing his friend completely devastated by Radha's glance, Batu swelled in ecstasy. Shaking his hands and turning his head from side to side, Batu said, "My dear friend, do not become bewildered while I am here to help you. Take this flower bomb and douse them in colors. Alas, what is impossible for one who has a friend like me?" Though weary from the pastime of Holi, Vrishabhanu Nandini suddenly gained new enthusiasm. Radhika's eyes bloomed wide, and her eyebrows moved elegantly like the movements of a swan. Her golden bangles rang loudly proclaiming victory as she took a vermilion flower bomb in her hand and fired it at Krishna's chest. This broke Krishna's rapture. Then, to the delight of all the gopis and gopis, Krishna sprung into action, grabbed a flower bomb, and chased after Radhika. He looked like an angry lion whose sleep had been interrupted. Lalita confronted Krishna and said, "O crest jewel of relishers, which playful girl threw that vermilion ball on your chest? It appears that she did not really throw a ball at you, but actually offered you her love. Do you know her name? Indeed, she always enchants you. But now is not a good time to become bewildered. Think it over carefully. For nothing, you are pursuing my innocent Sakhi." Lost in the bliss of Holi, Krishna ignored Lalita and kept chasing Radhika. Then Radhika smiled slightly and cast the playful waves of her glances at Shyamasakhi, before hiding amongst her girlfriends. Catching Shyamasakhi, Krishna smeared colors on her hair, forehead, cheeks, and breast. considering that an unfair act, Bakumala, Shamsaki's girlfriend, anxiously said, "Hey Shamsundar, that witty girl who pelted your chest with a flower bomb now throws out pearls with her flashing white smile. The radiance of her beautiful face mocks the glowing full moon. Why did you leave her aside to harass my innocent friend?" It's getting really late. Oh, we're almost finished. After listening to Bakumala, Krishna directed his attention toward Radhika instead of Shama. Eager and full of passion, Krishna approached Radhika and said, "O proud girl, come here and show your strength by throwing these balls at me." Being overwhelmed by Radhika's presence, Krishna smiled slightly and cast a sidelong glance as he moved closer to his beloved. Radhika shouted a command, "O Sakis, surround him and smash him with your flower bombs." With indistinct voices sounding like sweet cuckoos, the Sakis chanted, "Ghetto, ghetto, surround, surround. Motto, motto, kill, kill." You know, they were after so much intent, killing him with flower bombs. Killing with kindness. The effulgent young gopis almost captured Krishna, the relisher of transcendental bliss. The sportive son of Nanda Maharaj struck back by splashing the gopis with volleys of colors. The gopis responded with a shower of flower bombs. Aiming his jeweled pitchkari syringe, Krishna completely drenched the gopis with streams of fragrant kumkum and sandalwood scented water. Although repulsed by Krishna's furious attack, the gopis regrouped and repeatedly tried to capture him. The colored waters of holy washed away every bit of the gopis' shyness. Encouraged by their increased numbers, spontaneous affection, and agitated hearts, the gopis surrounded their beloved just like moonbeams encircling a cloud. All the directions reverberated with the sweet love songs of Matangi and her host of kinaris, accompanied by veenas and other musical instruments. The bangles on the lotus stem arms of the gopis jingled softly as they threw flower balls at the emperor of love. Bumblebees, cuckoos, and other exotic birds hummed and warbled pleasantly. The creepers danced along according to the instructions of the wind. Krishna's intimate friends, like Subal, sung the Vasant Rag. Some boys threw flower bombs and color powders on each other. Batu, the expert joker, performed an ecstatic dance full of mirth, their bangles chiming sweetly like the chirping of intoxicated sparrows. The gopis raised their lotus stem arms and again attacked Krishna. This time, instead of resisting, Krishna pretended to be too weak and tired to fight back. On the pretext of resting and catching his breath, Krishna stopped playing for a short while. While Krishna rested, the gopis stole his flute, pitchkari, flower bow, and arrows. One clever gopi even tried to remove Krishna's ornaments, but Radhika stopped her with a hint of her eyebrows because she did not want Krishna to be humiliated in his defeat. Then Radhika tenderly wiped the perspiration and colored powders from Krishna's lotus face with the edge of her sari. Radhika deeply relished the sweetness of serving her beloved hero after the battle. Taking tambula from the hand of a maidservant, Radhika put it in Krishna's mouth. With the movements of her eyebrows, Radhika directed Shamasaki to gently fan her lord. Seeing the gopis covered in colored powders, Madhumangala laughed and danced about while moving his shoulders and twisting his neck. He loudly shouted, "Hee hee! O Subal and my friends, we have won! Today Krishna has broken the pride of the famous daughter of King Vrishabhanu. Now she spontaneously serves him like a humble maidservant." What could be more amusing? Although our dear friend Krishna is slightly exhausted from the battle of Holi, he shines gloriously with his triumph. This is certainly befitting. Alas, alas, how could Krishna not be victorious? With a counselor like me, success is automatically guaranteed. After saying this, Bhattu happily raised his arms and danced about blissfully. After all, he's the one who arranged for the whole thing, so. All the gopis and gopas thoroughly enjoyed the funny antics of Bhattu. Overwhelmed with delight and satisfaction, Radhika kindly gave him her own pearl necklace. The Vanadevis, led by Vrinda and Matangi, rejoiced upon seeing the sweet loving exchanges of Krishna and the gopis. Everyone experienced the greatest happiness by playing Holi. Concluding the festival of spring, Krishna played his flute and walked away with his friends. They entered a shady grove to rest amidst the pleasing sound of the buzzing bees. Losing their gravity, the boys submerged in an ocean of joy as they smelled the sweet aroma of the forest flowers. Radha, who is expert in the 64 arts, relished unlimited happiness during the holy pastimes. Pleased with the superb musical performance of Matangi and her associates, Radhika gave them many valuable presents and dismissed them. Afterwards, Radhika and her friends relaxed in a beautiful mango grove wherein Krishna had often played. Joking and laughing, Radhika and her intimate sakis then enjoyed a sumptuous feast. See, even the sakis, they enjoy feast. You can imagine. So anyway, that's the end of the Vasantotsava chapter. We made it all the way through before 12 o'clock. So, anyhow, it's important that we get ourselves in the mood.